Welcome to The Forum, the program that educates, motivates, and advocates on behalf of our listeners. The Forum is sponsored by OSF Healthcare, and it is an honor for us to have in our studio Pastor Joseph Johnson with Star of Hope in our studio, and he is here to recollect, to reminisce, to reflect, and to inspire us for the future. Pastor Johnson, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
No problem. No problem at all. So let me start at the beginning.
Okay.
Because your journey, your history is one that every time I hear just bits and pieces of your story, I'm just amazed. You were one of what, 17 children?
Yes. My mom had 4 sets of twins and a set of triplets. I am a triplet.
Wow.
Yeah, I weighed 9 pounds, and my brother weighed 8, and the other weighed 7.
Nine, eight, and 7, and they're triplets.
And triplets.
Wow. And yeah. you came up in what, Mississippi?
Mississippi. Scotts, S-C-O-T-T-S, Mississippi.
Scotts, Mississippi.
Yeah, near Greenville, Mississippi.
Near Greenville. Okay, I think people know where Greenville is.
Yes.
And so growing up in Mississippi, what was that like?
As I stated earlier, I never knew what prejudice was all about until I came to Peoria, because we lived right in the center of 2 wealthy families, store owner, plantation owner, and a florist shop. And there my mom sat with 17 kids.
And the white people engaged with you and looked out
for
you?
There was our Sunday, Women's Day speaker. I went to White Boys Conference from the time I was 9 years old until I was 18. And I went as special music. Yeah.
Now, did you know at the time, because what era is this? Is this 30s, 40s?
In the 30s, I was born July 24th, 1935.
But did you know at the time that your situation was unusual, where you were in Scotts, Mississippi, that white people in other parts of the South?
Absolutely. It was in a Pacific location, says about a 20-mile square. It was totally different. The Klansmen reigned 20 miles south and north of us. But in our area, no. We never had nothing but a wooden latch on the door.
Wow.
No, we wasn't raised in inferiority.
Wow.
No.
So this was favored. You were favored.
My name is Joseph. I mean that I will change things.
Okay.
Yeah, I was favored by God.
I love it.
From the time I was born until this very day.
So how did you get from Mississippi to Peoria?
I hated chopping and picking cotton. And so I told my mom, no, I won't do that, because I'll hit a Chinaman's head. And she let me get away with it until I was 17 years old. And she said, you have to go to the field next year. My third cousin came to Peoria, and I begged to come back to Peoria, and she let me come.
Mm.
And I've been here
ever since.
Almost quasi ever since. I stayed here for a month, and I went back to Mississippi, and I realized I had made the mistake of my life. And I went to Detroit and stayed there for about a year. And my brother-in-law's sister's husband died, and she proposed to me. She had 9 children, and I was 18 years old. And she said, if you marry me, you'll never have to work a day in my life. I would have missed the whole plan that God had for my life if I would have married her.
Mm.
And so I escaped from Detroit to Peoria.
Wow. Escaped.
Yeah. Yes. It was, imagine me with 9 children. The oldest one's 9 years old, and I'm 18? Come
right.
on.
Right.
Been spoiled all my life.
Right. Yeah, you don't want that.
No. I was smart enough.
So when you came to Peoria, what was it, 17, 18 years old?
18.
What did you do when you got to town? Where did you work? Where did you go?
I did janitor work for Alan Scott. I cleaned office at Caterpillar Building. And my cousin was so rigid If you wasn't there at 6 o'clock, this when they fed us at 6 o'clock, you didn't eat until the next day.
Mm.
So for 4 years, I ate out of the garbage most of the time, but I wasn't going to go back to Mississippi.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. See, everything you tell me, as I said at the onset, every time I hear little bits and pieces, I could do a whole half hour just on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So after that, what was your journey like?
Well, I met a young lady, Annie Jo Gordon, Annie Jo Hunter, and 4 or 5 years later, we got married. And that was the beginning of my education. She said, if you're going to make something out of your life, you better do it now. We're not going to do it when we get kids. So I went to Chicago Baptist Institute for my theological training. And then from there to Minnesota for my legal training. And never filled out an application for juvenile court. I was in New York at the World's Fair when the judge hired me.
Mm.
Yeah.
So a judge just hired you on the spot at the World's Fair?
Yes. Well, I would go to court with teenagers and gangs in those days. And so they knew me for visiting the court with teenagers and so forth like that.
On their behalf?
On their behalf, yes. The Roman Saints and the Polka Dot Gang. And we met at Carver Center, I thought, to dissolve the game, and they was going to shoot it out. That was 101 guns, and I told them I had the Carver Center surrounded by policemen, lay the guns at my feet, and they laid 101 guns, and that was the end of the game.
What year was this? Was this 40s, 50s?
No, that was in the 60s.
In the 60s?
Yes. Pure criminal activity was horrible.
Really?
Yes.
So we think it's horrible now.
Oh, it's nothing. It's nothing in comparison to what it was then. Yep.
So back in the 50s and 60s, and I'm going to fill in some blanks, and you tell me if I'm off with this. Because I'm sure Peoria followed the line of what a lot of American cities follow. You had a lot of black people coming up from the South, trying to make it. When they came up north, they found that there was segregation, not a lot of job
opportunity. They basically lived in Waterholme and in Taft Home. And the black young men's was pushed out of school in their junior and senior year, as far as that concerned. Mary McDade and I, she was on the school board, and of course, I was eventually hired at juvenile court, and she raised hell on Monday, and I raised hell in the school district. There was only two blacks, Mrs. Alice Taylor, and the other guy was Mr. Williams. That was it.
Two teachers. In the district 150.
And when you got to be a junior, a senior, if you were black, they found a way to expel you or get you out of school. And so that gave rise to the crime. There was, the streets was filled with angry young men. And I went to court with them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow. Okay, so like I said, I'm gonna try not to to do a whole half hour on that because we can. Okay,
no.
All right. So, in the '60s, when these guys laid all their guns down, then you're this peacemaker.
Yes.
Right. So
never owned a gun in my life.
Right. But somebody took note of it. You were saying a judge took note of your efforts and then hired you.
Right, Judge Ivan.
Okay.
He saw my attendance in court with young men that was there for court hearings. And I worked for the Department of Correction for 17 months. And so I was in court about 3 or 4 days a week with somebody's son.
Somebody's son.
Yes. It was basically boys, not very many girls at all.
And you probably kept countless numbers of guys from going to prison.
Yes. And I adopted or fostered 24 young black men.
Over the course of you doing the thing?
Yeah, about 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me more about keeping them out of prison. Because before we were recording, you were saying how...
The judge wanted a reason not to send 10% of the population at that time was 90% of the juvenile court services system. And that didn't make sense to me. Not at all. There had never been a black person hired for Peoria County until I came along. I was the first black person that they hired. And they said they couldn't find qualified blacks. But what I found out, my boss had a fourth grade education. His boss had a 10th grade education. They were lying to us. It turned to be our favor because it pushed us to go to college and it pushed them out. And so I became, after I was there as a probation officer 2 years, I became director of juvenile court services. I was the first black director in this country. So I went from here to Canada, California, establishing juvenile court services, counseling services. They did not provide counseling for black youth. Mm-hmm. You was arrested and went to Department of Correction or you went back home.
And the Department of Corrections didn't correct you?
No. No, they made you a criminal for the rest of your life.
They hardened you, if anything.
Yes, they hardened. Because when you came back, who would hire you? And you couldn't go to school. You wasn't accepted in school. So it was an open door to crime, but a dead end street for progress.
And how, looking back, how are you processing that now? Do you think, as some people have said, that it was all by design, it was a conspiracy,
My name is Joseph. I changed things. That's what my mom said at birth. She named me Joseph as in the Bible. If you read that story, that's me. And so I changed things. The judge said they couldn't find qualified blacks. I said, put the intake department in my office. Mm-hmm. And he came back about 3 years later. I had hired 161 black men.
Wow.
I didn't hire not a janitor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You so, did change things.
I did change. Yeah. And Annie Jo did. She filled Caterpillar with black folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I filled the courthouse and the county of Peoria and the city of Peoria.
So when we thank you. You got to let me say this. And I think I speak on behalf of anybody's listening, and anybody who knows you or anybody who has a clue about Peoria's history, we are so grateful, and you know this. I mean, outside of Star Hope, you know, when we had the street changed in your honor, people recognize that. But you have a tendency to say things like, the work isn't finished, and absolutely, that there's still work to be done. And I'm curious about that aspect of it, because before we were recording, you were saying that when you would show up in court, it would make a big difference. Judges sometimes would look at your presence in court,
right,
and not send a young man to prison. And you were saying how, and you didn't use these words, but I'll use these words. What I detect is that there's some disappointment that ministers are still not doing that kind of thing.
Right, until this very day. I was their excuse for not sending some black kids to the Department of Correction. A child showed up for saying a bad word to a police officer or to a school. He hadn't committed a crime. Not at all. But he was black. And they wanted to stop him before he graduated from grade school usually Roosevelt was where they kicked them out at. And if you made it to Manual, by the time you got to be a junior, senior, if you were a black male, you were kicked out of school. Didn't make any difference. Woodrow was somewhat different. Center was a little different, but Woodrow was some salvation for blacks. Forget about Richwood. It was a tragedy. Yep. There was a place in Richwood called Coon Corner. Yes.
Coon Corner.
Coon Corner. That's where the black kids, they met each other there at Richwood High School.
Now, what year are we talking? 50s, 60s?
We're talking about in the 60s and 70s. We're not talking a long time ago.
Right.
No.
Wow. We want to remind our listeners, this is The Forum on WPNV. The Forum is sponsored by OSF Healthcare, and we're talking to Pastor Joseph Johnson, and he is, as I mentioned at the onset, reflecting on his journey in Peoria and just filling our spirit with inspiration. Really, when I hear you talk, I get goosebumps because it's like you're letting us know from whence we came.
Yes.
And once we know from whence we came, we have to then take that energy and know that, hey, we're standing on the shoulders of some powerful folks in order for us to move forward. How you talked about the ministers showing up in court. What else do you see in terms of, let's talk about teachers. What would you like to see teachers do or impart when they have black students in front of them?
Well, it wasn't outside of Alice Taylor and Mr. William. Those were the only two black teachers in District 150 for years, as far as that concerned. So their kids didn't have no representation in school. And any little activity, they were suspended or expelled from school. Mm-hmm. Because the white teachers, I can remember my first foster son, Ralph, when I enrolled him in Woodrow, she quit teaching and went to Richwood because she was not going to teach a kid that had been involved in gang life. So I quasi-adopted like 24 young men, sent 33 to college, bought about 33 automobiles, and 8 to 12 homes for no relatives. These was folks that couldn't give me a thank you card.
So I'm gonna ask you an obvious question. What would their lives have been like had you not stepped in and done that?
The same as mine would have been if somebody hadn't done it for me. You know, my mom would borrow $17 every 2 weeks to feed 20 of us. And so I know what it is to sit at the table and say a verse. And they would say, the Lord is my shepherd and I shall not want. And I would say, Jesus wept. Boy, why would you say Jesus wept? If he saw the condition that we were in, Jesus would cry. And so it was by faith in God that I came to the place that I'm in. So I take no credit for helping anybody.
What's your advice to teachers?
Treat the kids as humans. As you, this is your child or your nephew or your cousin. Maybe have lost his way. Maybe didn't have reading classes pre-kindergarten, pre-high school, and in grade school. The teachers didn't at that time. Their priority was not to teach black kids how to read. Manuel graduated, so many blacks didn't know how to read. Nope. They just kept them in school. Yep.
When you look at the court system and you look at statistics nowadays, and when you were saying you had 10% of the population comprising 90% of the juvenile detention population. Sadly, those numbers are not that much different today in terms of...
But what is different? There's counseling being provided now. It wasn't then. Art Fainter, an old man, white man, that was responsible for collecting fines from about 500 blacks. There was no counseling at all.
Collecting fines?
Yeah, they went to court. And he just collected the fine and sent them back home. And if they got back in trouble, they went to jail. Same thing in juvenile court. There was no counseling provided for black kids. None whatsoever when I went there. Mm-hmm. No. And so we had 500 plus kids on probation. And we had, 10% of the population? Come on. And so I changed that thing.
Yeah.
Because there was no black. I was the first black that worked at the courthouse. There was no blacks in probation.
How were you received in those early years on the job?
I was tall, and I had big eyes. And if they would say something, I would say words like, "What in the hell are you talking about?" And that was it.
Okay.
For 40 years, not one person, not one judge, not one county board member stopped me from doing anything that I wanted to do that was right. For 59 years at church, no member has stopped me from doing anything. So when I stand before God, I'm without excuse. Nope. I did what I wanted to do, whether it was at home, whether it was at church, whether it was at work. That was it. I had it my way.
When you talk about counseling, what would you say to these young people to help them get back on the right path? What kind of counseling would you give them?
We started a parenting education class, and we would start sometime from kindergarten. They didn't know how to read. They didn't know how to write. They didn't know the ABCs.
How old are we talking?
Anywhere from, I would suspect, 10 to 16. Didn't make any difference. The teachers didn't teach at school.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
So what would you say to them to get them motivated, to get them inspired to do something better with their lives? What was your counseling points that you would make with these people?
Just reading books. Started almost at kindergarten level, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And to see the expression on a kid that was 16 years old learning to read for the first time, there is nothing that fills your life with joy more than that. Mm-hmm. So my reward came from seeing somebody that would have ended up in the system for the rest of his life that is now working in management. His son or his daughter went to Bradley. You know, I remember the first young man I sent to Bradley at my expense. But I had to agree to close the whole family off of $3,100 a year.
Hmm.
Yeah. So you get your satisfaction from seeing folks that would not have made it that is making it.
Yeah. Last couple of questions. What concerns you today, and what gives you hope for the future? Anything that you look out into the world and say, that's a problem, or I don't like that, or that's an issue, or we need to do something about that?
I personally believe that God got somebody. There are Joe Johnsons all over the world. And he or she will arise to the occasion. But what is perhaps frustrating is the lack of the parenting commitment towards their children. I had the kind of mother that told me at least 4 times a day, "I love you." Never remember a day in my life that I didn't hear that. Many kids has never heard that in their whole growing up. Nope. So it's the lack of love, expression of love. Kids can survive off bread and milk and water, but the lack of love is a whole different story.
I've been asking you a lot of questions. Anything that you wanted to impart that we didn't talk about?
Not really.
Anything you want to say to our listeners, to the folks in Peoria, to, you know, a shout out to somebody, or anything that...
If I had one thing to say, don't lose hope or faith. It's going to get better. It's going to get better.
Regardless of what's going
on? Regardless of what you see or what you hear, things are going to get better. There are Gary and Joes that God has planted throughout the whole world. It's going to get better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talking with Pastor Joe Johnson, many people know him from Star of Hope, and countless folks know him from the Peoria County Juvenile Probation. He has helped, and your journey is one that a lot of folks are glad to have witnessed, because you've made a very positive difference in the lives of generations of people in Peoria. I'm not supposed to ask you, I was told not to ask you your age, okay?
I have no problem with telling you my age. I'll be 89 years old July the 24th of this year.
89,
yes. And outside of an ingrown toenail, I don't have no problem. One thing, I asked the Lord 59 years ago if he wanted me to pastor, don't send a tornado, a hurricane to Peoria, and don't go behind my back and kill my kids before they're 25 years old. I've lost one kid in 59 years before he was 25. Nobody in the last 59 years has seen a tornado, a hurricane. No way. Mm-hmm. Not across. Mm-hmm. East Peoria, they came to East Peoria.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
So the city has been blessed.
The city has been blessed. So you're going to retire on April 28th.
Yes.
So a lot of people, when they retire, they find other jobs and other stuff to do. Are you going to retire and kick back and relax? Or are you going to retire and then we're going to find out that...
I'll never relax.
Okay.
I'll be working until I'm caught up. I'll be going to court again with folks that don't have attorneys and friends. And I'll be working with senior citizens. Pastor Keenan and I do it one day a week now. It perhaps would be, for me, about 3 days a week. So I'll never stop doing what I'm doing.
Wow.
No.
Okay. I kind of knew that.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No. It's my life.
Right.
Yeah.
Pastor Joe Johnson, hey, thanks for being on the forum.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
The Forum is sponsored by OSF Healthcare. The Forum airs at 10 a.m. on Saturday and is rebroadcast at 7 p.m. on Sunday. We want to leave you with a quote from novelist Alice Walker, who said, "The most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any." Thanks for listening.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking, time for thinking ahead.